This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Get ready for Foodie and the Beast with Nikki and David Nellis. A foodie born and bred, Nikki loves dining out, chatting up chefs, and insider industry buzz. David thinks a great meal is a good burger, a frosty brew, and a check for under 20 bucks. Foodie married Beast. And now they have the Food and Wine Variety Show that has everyone talking. From famous chefs, winemakers, and brewmasters to authors, farmers, and restaurant critics. It's Foodie and the Beast, and it's on now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Foodie and the Beast. We're live after a week off in Cape Cod.
Which was really, really nice.
I'm really sorry not to be there, but glad to be back with you. Just want to remind everybody, if you like this show, you can actually see it on TV next Friday night at 8:30 and again next Saturday at noon on Washington Nonstop NBC4's cable channel.
That's right. So,
Cape Cod, Wellfleet Oysters, Provincetown, meals at Victor's and Seoul.
We had a really lovely time. I mean, we've never been to the Cape before, so Wellfleet was quite an experience. Very quiet, not a lot going on out there, but we did dine on Wellfleet oysters daily, which was a super treat.
Oh my gosh.
So briny, so delicious, and lobsters are everywhere. In the Cape.
I'm surprised there are any lobsters left in the ocean.
Well, I know, but people always talk about lobsters being, you know, so available when you're up north in that area in New England. But it was amazing how everybody had them and how inexpensive they were.
They were, what was it, like $8 a pound?
Oh, yeah,
or something?
It was nothing.
It was crazy.
It was amazing.
So
that was fun.
I ate me some lobster.
Just a little bit of lobster.
Yeah. All right, a couple things before we get into the show. Just want to remind everybody that Bethesda Central Farm Market is open right now.
Either go before the show or after the show.
Yeah, don't go during the show or I get you.
But you can listen to us on the radio.
But they've got
the
live music and lots of food. Broody Wine is doing a tasting there, and they've got a new vendor that has a cocoa plantation in the Dominican Republic. I just read about this, and they bring the beans back to Gaithersburg and make their own chocolate products. So
cool.
I want to check that out.
Yeah, we'll check that out next
week.
Great
show today. July 14th is Bastille Day. Vive la France! That's the only French I know except for Où est la toilette.
No, I know one more. La déchéance, s'il vous plaît.
You would know that one. And say, then she says, give the check to my husband in English.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What could be more timely?
Which husband? Not this husband.
It's very French way.
Oh, you're mean.
Yeah, I'm honest.
You're mean. You're evil. Christophe Pateau is in. He's the chef owner of Old Town's fabulous Bastille restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an old friend, and he's in with great talk and great taste of Bastille Day treats.
I know. I'm looking forward to digging in what he brought in today. Okay, and later in the show, we will be talking to a southerly woman. Her name is Martha Hall Foose. She is a James Beard award-winning author of the best-selling cookbook, Screen Doors and Sweet Tea. And her new cookbook, Southerly Course, has all these fabulous recipes right out of Mississippi. So we are going to get a total education on Southern dining today.
Total. Complete.
Absolutely. We'll get it all because I know nothing about it except for what I've read in her
two books. You have to learn how to say y'all.
That I'm not good at. And I'm not saying this.
I will say this. What a friend we have in cheeses.
Okay. You're such a loser. Okay. And so anyway, we have Ripple in today. It's a little gem of a restaurant up in Cleveland Park, and they have a tremendous cheese program. And with coming in today with lots of different cheeses is Julia Nicolation. Did I say that right? I think I said it right. She is the mistress of fromage there, and she's going to be cutting the cheese.
You're not going to say what a friend we have in cheeses, but you'll say.
I'm trying to be funny. There you go.
You're not
all right,
funny.
Take it over.
And the new GM and wine director at Michel out in Tyson's Corner, you want to be Joseph.
Joseph.
Not JJ, his buddies call him JJ. JJ Cerrone is in, and he's he's not French, but Michel Richard is nothing.
But we're not going to hold it
against you. Nothing if not French. So Joseph is in to pour some of Chef Richard's and his own favorites for Bastille Day celebrating, and I guess celebrating beyond Bastille Day. So Joseph, why don't we start with you? Bastille Day celebrates the storming of the prison and French independence. I can guess the answer to this, but what is sort of the favorite beverage for celebrating Bastille Day in France?
Well, I think hands down, champagne.
Good guess for me. So. All right, well, what did you bring in for us to try?
Well, this is Jackison Cuvée 734. Mm-hmm. Jackison Champagne. I selected this because it was founded in 1789,
which
was about the start of the French Revolution. Right. And in fact, they were so successful that Napoleon gave them a gold medal, and it became Napoleon's favorite champagne.
Really?
Yes.
That's amazing. And you know, it's so funny.
But we all know what happened to Napoleon.
Yes.
Right, okay.
Did he take the champagne with him?
That's true. <Right.
laughs> You cannot take it with you.
But, a couple of interesting facts about this champagne house, too, is that they patented the mousselet, which is essentially the wire cage that goes on top of the champagne bottle, securing the cork.
Oh, really?
And perfected the amount of sugar necessary to keep bottles from exploding. So they were pretty integral into the production of champagne at that time.
All right. Well, while you're pouring that, we're going to turn to a real Frenchman in to talk about Bastille Day. Christophe, you know, if anybody can tell us about Bastille Day, it's got to be you. And obviously, aside from champagne and other potables, what are some of the traditional ways that the French celebrate their independence?
Drink a lot.
Hot dogs and hamburgers? No.
I would say there's a lot of, like, in every square, on every town, there's always a little party going on Bastille Day, especially late into the night. And usually there's always a lot of grilled food, roast chicken, all the classic, and then a lot of wine.
Mm-hmm. Are there fireworks on Bastille Day?
Yes. Usually there's fireworks. Pretty much every town has its own fireworks.
Oh, neat.
More or less successful, depending. Don't forget, the fireworks
were
started with the French. I think Louis XIV was the first one that promoted that a lot, I think.
The great fire of 2011.
Didn't work out too well for him, but...
Well, so now at your restaurant in Alexandria, named Bastille, you are
clever.
You're doing some promotions to celebrate the holiday.
Right.
You're already in it.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about what you're doing.
Well, we try to make a link between, since it's a Franco-American team, my wife is American from Missouri, and then I'm French.
No, not Missouri. Missouri. Missouri is something else. Missouri is what happens once you get married.
Well, I won't go there.
Yeah,
sure.
Let's not go there.
Anyway.
Because she's probably listening.
So we wanted to link, and this is the history of our restaurant being a Franco and American. It's maybe more Franco than American, but it is also American. So we wanted to create a link between the two and highlight two famous characters that did promote both revolution, the American and the French. General Lafayette obviously helped the American to give him a boost against the... mean English.
Right.
And then Benjamin Franklin, which had a very strong role also within the French Revolution as being the American ambassador in Paris, which helped him to get some money for the American.
So what are the dishes?
Did you have to do a lot of research? I mean, how'd you come up with these menus?
Right. Well, we have two menus. One is the Lafayette, one is the Franklin. They both focus more on the type of food they would like, either from their childhood memory or just something that we know from writing that they like better.
Mm-hmm.
We knew that Benjamin Franklin was really like fried chicken. The braised pork is just more an inspiration of mine. That's saying, you know, barbecue pork obviously is something that we had around. It might not have been barbecued, but I put my twist onto that one. A corn soup, because it was something already available at the time. And then on the dessert side, Michel find out that he liked a lot of rice pudding.
Oh.
And like a lot of rhubarb. So we have a strawberry rhubarb with the rice pudding.
Yeah.
That's an example. And on the Lafayette, it was a little bit more tricky because there's not as much writing, but we found a few things. So we had the roast chicken, which is very classic French. And then we had a steak, which is probably a little bit of a liberty I took on that part because they didn't eat much steak in those days.
Mm-hmm.
What's more than a French, that nice, you know, Bavette steak with
sauce. If they didn't eat much steak, what did they do with the boy cows?
In those days, meats were more braised than roasted.
I gotcha.
Only very few, especially the kings or people like really wealthy, could afford to get the prime cuts.
Those cuts.
And there was a problem of logistics to get the meat fresh to be good to
roast.
They
didn't have refrigeration.
Yeah.
They didn't?
They didn't. Don't you remember back then?
Let me see.
I remember saying to the Marquis
de Lafayette. Frigidaire was a little bit behind at the time.
Who weighed the refrigeration? Okay. All right. So, and I, because I actually did some reading for once about
well,
this.
Actually,
I know.
Emailed it
Let's
to
all
him.
Marvel. But you've got, honest. You're involved in some Bastille Day event at the French Embassy, right?
Yes. What's... That's the fourth time in a row. We go to the French Embassy on Saturday. July 16, we celebrate the Bastille Day at the embassy. There will be another 15 or 20 other restaurants there.
So what's that
mostly
event
French
like?
People.
I've never been.
It's a lineup. Every restaurant's got the table stand. We all bring our own dish, mm-hmm. and then all together, it's a big, big buffet, huge. And then there's a band, there's a dance floor, there's a big party.
I think Nikki was pushing.
Usually 700-800 people. That's what they expect.
Oh, I think she was pushing for an invitation.
I was
she
not
said
pushing
that.
For an
I've
invitation.
Never been to that one.
I just haven't
That's
been.
One of the few I haven't
just,
been to.
No problem. I'll take that. Take care of that.
No.
No. Somebody else was pushing for the invitation. That would be my husband.
I can get you in. No problem.
How subtle do I have to be?
Pay for your own tickets. Stop being so cheap.
So I got a question for you because... Uh-huh. We know that you do a lot of work with local purveyors, and my question mm-hmm. is, how do you sort of balance what's available seasonally around here mm-hmm. to what makes sense for the menu of a French restaurant?
That's a good question.
Thank you.
And yes, it is a headache. But
it was actually my question, just
that
so
That wasn't
you know.
Your question. That was my
I wrote
question.
That question.
Oh, that's
Go
not
ahead.
True.
This
yes.
is a collegial, she's a collegial
right.
question.
Go ahead.
Well, after now many years, I... kind of gather a certain amount of different purveyors. So I know things that are going to be available at one point or another during mm-hmm. the year. And then, yes, it push you to some limit sometime where you put something on the menu and then you know it's only going to be available for a month or you're already thinking what I'm going to put to replace it when it's not available anymore. So it's constant adjusting your menu.
Well, are there
That's
things-
what I put on the website. It's a sample menu because I really, some weeks or another, I can change some things at the last minute because, well... You know, run out of strawberry, you know, a few weeks ago, and
but are there things that like the Americans will eat that the French wouldn't touch, and vice versa, that you have to work your way around? That was my question.
That one was your.
Well, nowadays it's not really too much challenge, but yes, there are. You know, 4 years ago, we would try to sell a sardine grill in the summer, which is very traditional in France mm-hmm. too. One of the grill thing that you'll find a lot on the town square in Bastille Day. They were not selling well. Now I have them on menu and we can keep them up. So it goes...
So do you just think it's an education process?
Yeah, like I think it's progressively,
there,
yeah.
People will start?
Yes.
So
yes.
Now your wife, Michelle, is the pastry chef there.
Yes.
Does she face that? Are there? I mean,
yes.
I can't imagine. Really?
Yes. There's ingredients that have been harder to push, and then she's got an approach that's sometimes to add a little bit of a savory or spice to the dessert. And sometimes I haven't been always well received, but little by little, we noticed that our menu is a lot more evolving mm-hmm. in the last few years. I think, you know, you cultivate a crowd of customers that at the beginning they don't know you, and then after a while they start to trust you. So it's a building a relationship with the customers. After a while, I have customers that comes and they systematically take only the special of the day because they just want to see what I'm doing.
What's
They
fresh?
Don't really looking at the money.
Well, we have to take a break, but when we get back,
sure.
I do want to just talk a little bit about what it's like to work with these local purveyors
sure.
and how you incorporate these ingredients into some of your menu.
Sure.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We are doing Bastille Day here with Bubbles and Chef Christophe Pateau, and we've got more goods when we get back.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know, that this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
Since 1886, the Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, D.C. has been helping children in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Now they are visited by over 3,000 children every day. The club teaches character and leadership development and arts education. No child is turned away for being unable to pay the $25 fee, and the club needs your help to make this happen. Give a gift online at bgcgw.org. The life you lift up today will be the life that brings a better world tomorrow. This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
And we are back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and I'm sitting next to one of my favorite chefs.
Only because he's got food.
Because he's got, well, he's one, no, he's a hale and hearty
your
fellow, well
today.
Met. Christophe Pateau is the chef owner of Bastille in Old Town. And what you bring in today? I'm going to hold this up for the camera,
Bring you one of the dishes on the Lafayette menu, which is a rillette. This one is a rillette of rabbit. So
yum!
It's a confit rabbit.
This is what
legs.
I call a rillet.
There you go. And then with
a little
cornichon and then toasted country bread. Enjoy. It's a good dish for this time of the day.
Would you
right?
agree with me
it's
that
perfect. It's perfect. This is exactly what I want.
Would you agree
morning.
That it does not pay to come into this world as a rabbit?
Well,
not in a
you
French
got stuff
restaurant.
To do. You got yeah. Easter, but after Easter, we don't need you anymore. There we go.
All right. So,
well, so let's just talk quickly. We only have a little bit of time
sure.
left. But you offer a lot of price-fixed menus at
yes.
your restaurant.
Yes.
And David and I were kind of talking about it last night because there is a nice a la carte menu as well. What is the benefit, do you think, for you as a chef to offer the price fixed menus, and what does it do for the customer who comes in?
Well, there's twofold for the customer, obviously. It's I think it's a bargain on some aspect. But for me, it allowed me to build menus that make sense on the culinary standpoint, trying mm-hmm. to build things that goes together mm-hmm. and take those customer through the journey of the meal as I think it should be eaten.
Mm-hmm.
It's very well received. I would say that more than half our customers take pre-fees nowadays.
Really?
Yes.
That's
even at lunchtime. So, and then we do the same thing for brunch as well.
Just to, in other words.
Well, just right. You hit the nail there. It also makes it easier for us in the kitchen because we have a better lineup. I mean, we have a better lineup. We know what's coming up. We have
right.
a more structured ordering. Instead of having a lot of thing order all over the place, we have more of an ordering is more funnel into a direction, so we know.
So like timing and
timing
of that nature.
And you know, and the lineup of food coming out in the window is easier for us.
Excellent. All right.
All right.
Chef,
so let's wait. Let's make sure everybody knows where Bastille is and where to find.
Sure.
You on the
we're
way.
On 1201 North Royal Street in Old Town Alexandria, about 10 blocks from King Street at the north end of Alexandria.
And you have a beautiful outdoor patio.
Absolutely, we have like 30 seats outside. Beautiful, very full all the time. So. Enjoy that. And we have a website, BastilleRestaurant.com.
Excellent. Okay. Thank you, Chef. Thank you so much.
Okay, sure. Chef Joe.
Okay, so Joseph, I want to talk about this glorious champagne you poured. If there is barely a bubble in here, is that
right? And that's
is that what it's normally
somewhat
like?
Somewhat a result of the age. Now, what Jackison has been doing recently is they've taken kind of a reverse approach to making non-vintage champagne.
Okay.
Champagne is actually not a very good place to grow grapes. It's the weather is terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, many champagne houses were, most champagne is non-vintage, as you know, and,
right.
and what they're doing is they're blending years to kind of hide some of the inconsistencies as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Jackison didn't feel that that was right because they wanted to show that there are good years and there are good vineyards out there. And so what they did is they are now trying to do a non-vintage program where they are showing the best of a year, blending with a little bit of back years or reserve wines. So this is 73% of the 2006 vintage.
Interesting.
So being a little bit older, the bubbles are going to be a little bit slighter, and you're going to have more of a refined wine as the end product.
Which is exactly what it tastes like.
Exactly.
It's very delicious. Okay, so you're working with Chef John Matheson now.
Yes.
He's behind the stove there at Michel,
mm-hmm.
of Michel Richard. What's it like working with two chefs, Michel Richard and John Matheson?
It's great. They're both a tremendous talent.
No. We know it's great. What's it really like? Come on. No,
well, Michelle is.
Well, he's saying that, but he has a gun in his mouth. You know.
Michelle is a perfectionist. He's an artist. He's when you think of great chefs in D.C., immediately you think of Michelle Richard.
And nationally, absolutely.
And so being under that umbrella, and he is about every little point and in the kitchen, and I think he really understands the market and what people are looking for. Mm-hmm. And then to have John there to execute. Has been a really great opportunity for us to grow as a restaurant.
Well, when we get back to you later on in the show, I want to talk about how you work the wine program in with both what Michelle Richard and John Matheson are doing. But first, more importantly, what are you pouring next?
Absolutely. This is a Chablis by Domaine Milan. It is a village. Great value. This retails at about $15. Which for a white Burgundy is a great price point.
Mm-hmm.
And Chablis is actually very underappreciated. It used to be one of the premier wines in brasseries throughout France. And then it became so popular that wine producers around the world and in the New World were referring to any generic white wine as Chablis.
Right.
And so Chablis, the place, was lost. So I like to bring that back, and it's really a very fresh, crisp style wine that goes with a variety of seafood items, pâtés, cheeses, and
rabbit rillette by chance.
Yes,
excellent,
absolutely.
All right.
Well,
I can remember ordering that in the '70s and calling it Chablis. Yeah,
because you're a classy guy.
I was a kind of sewer.
Yes.
All right. So let's turn to Martha Hall Foos, who's on the phone. Are you there, Martha?
I'm here.
Hi. Welcome to Foodie and the Beast, all the way from Mississippi. When you launched your first cookbook, which was Screen Doors and Sweet Tea, it was an immediate big hit, and you won the James Beard Award. And it took the reader on a very intimate journey into your life and into your kitchen and the evolution of Southern foodways. How does a southerly course, I'm sorry, your new cookbook, stay that course that you first set back then?
When I was working on Screen Doors and Sweet Tea about 3 years ago, I guess. I really wanted to sort of cover the canon of Deep South cooking, particularly the Mississippi Delta area. So in that one, there's a lot of traditional recipes for, you know, fried chicken and sweet potato biscuits and catfish and hush puppies. And so with the second book, instead of really covering such a broader area of the South, I really wanted to kind of look closer to home for inspiration and write a little bit more about the people and places that I really hold dear about the Mississippi Delta.
There's a lot of Southern culture and a lot of anecdotes mixed back into in the cookbook. And I have to ask, because you're speaking at the Oxford Public Library later today, do you know Lisa Howarth and the Square Bookstore?
I do. That's actually where I got my first cooking job.
Oh. All right. Well, then I want to ask you a favor, because Lisa Howarth used to be Lisa Johnston from Bethesda, Maryland, and she was my girlfriend in high school.
Oh.
And I haven't seen her in 40 years. Tell her I look exactly the same, by the way.
I can assure you that she probably looks exactly the same.
She was hot
Scorching
stuff.
Hot.
If you would tell her that David and Nikki Nellis said hello.
Well, she doesn't know May.
Well,
I wasn't born yet when they were dating.
She knows of you. I ran into her mother, so she knows you exist. But if you would do that, that would be much appreciated.
I certainly can.
All right. Well, let's get back to something important. Your book.
That is important.
Oh, no,
that's my life.
So I read cookbooks like novels, and I just thought your book was fascinating with all your stories and the history that you imparted in it. Tell us about some of the recipes that you put in this book. I mean, are these recipes that you grew up with, or are they things that you reached out to friends and family for? How did you sort of cull the recipes together?
When you're working on a cookbook, it's harder to figure out what recipes to leave out than it is to decide which recipes to put in.
Mm-hmm.
So some of the recipes are fun and easy for sort of the novice cook.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a great recipe for a no-cook fudge that's super delicious. And that was a old family recipe that had come from my great aunt. And other recipes, I wanted to take kind of a modern, easier spin on things. I'm a kind of a kitchen realist now. I used to be a food snob, but now I have an 8-year-old, and I'm completely over myself.
That'll do it.
We have 5 kids, so I can totally relate. I
totally
completely understand.
So a lot of some of the recipes are maybe really inspired by some of those deep, long cooking traditional ways of Southern cooking. There's a great sweet pickle braised pork shoulder. Mm-hmm. That's one of those great things that you can put it on in the morning and get the rest of your day done, and then you have this delicious pull-apart, vinegary, barbecue-y pork shoulder to have for dinner. And then there's kind of a traditional Southern blackberry jam cake with the cream cheese and caramel icing that's really delicious.
It looked really delicious. I haven't had a chance to dig into that one yet. But
And some things that I think people might not right off the bat peg as being Southern, but I think they're Southern because I make them in my kitchen. And we're using some a traditional Southern ingredient. So there's a wonton soup that has collard greens in it, and a soybean salad that's made with edamame and cayenne pepper and sesame oil. So there's some flavors that I think are maybe new takes in the South, but at the same time, really, I think, embrace what cooking in the South is like today. We're not overwhelmed with nostalgia as much as people think we are.
Well, actually, it was interesting that you say that, because that was one of my questions. There were recipes for things in your book that I was like, huh, I wouldn't think of that as Southern, like your Jerusalem artichoke recipe or the kibbeh recipe. I mean, that's Lebanese, but I appreciated how you took a Southern take on it. Is it based on the products available?
Well, that for the kibbeh recipe, you know, there's a giant, long-standing Lebanese and Syrian population in the Mississippi Delta, and mm-hmm. So at a family reunion, you're just as likely to find, you know, traditional coleslaw next to tabbouleh on the table.
Huh.
So that's really kind of a classic of the area that you'll even find in convenience stores throughout.
You know, I was in Beirut. I was in Beirut, and everybody kept calling me y'all. So I wonder if that. All right, so I have another question, because looking through the book, there are a lot of recipes for game, for rabbit and venison. And I mean, obviously that's prevalent in Southern cooking, but do people go out and shoot their own, or do they shoot them like we do and go to Whole Foods? I mean, Is that wild game that people are likely to get on their own, or are those staples in supermarkets?
We're pretty particularly where I live is a very rural area, and so I think that's one of the things in the South. Whether you live in a rural area and you are dealing with wild game that, you know, a friend or someone in your family has brought to you, but in the same vein, if you're, you know, you live in a big metropolitan Southern area like New Orleans or Atlanta, or, you know, we might claim Washington as Southern.
Some people do, and then sometimes the North claims us. It totally depends.
I don't think so. John Wilkes Booth tried that, and it didn't work.
But, you know, that's the thing, one of the great things about Southern cooking is that it does transition so well from sort of a rural experience to sort of fancy city folk eating at the same time.
Well, we're a little fancy up here, but I can totally get down home anytime.
I don't know, that Chablis, I think, would be pretty good with the rabbit.
And I'll pour some in the microphone.
Well, listen, we have to take a quick break. Can we just put you on hold for just a sec? We just have to run some commercials, but then when we come back, we want to ask you a couple more questions about the book. Excellent. This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're getting a southerly education this morning. We'll be back in just a sec.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering in. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
In case you didn't know, the Bethesda Central Farm Market is now open, and it's big. With around 40 vendors, folks have a ton to choose from, like local and organic produce, a huge selection of natural meats and poultry, eggs, cheeses, cured meats, take-home foods, and more. Plus, they've got a huge selection of bakery and organic breads, fresh ground coffee, and more, all from top-quality family farmers, orchard growers, and artisan food producers. And since I'm the Beast, you know I'm cheap, and I want to say that aside from the really big draw of great prices and great selection is the fact that there's free parking on Sundays when the farmer's market is open, and I love free parking. That's Bethesda Central Farm Market. It's open Sundays from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Elm Street in downtown Bethesda. Visit BethesdaCentralFarmMarket.com for more info and to sign up for their weekly e-blast with lots of info about special arrivals and more. Bethesda Central Farm Market. If you're not living on the farm, it's the next best thing.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible. March for Babies! Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Hi, we're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis, and we've got Martha Hall Foos on the phone. She's just authored another great cookbook called A Southerly Course. And Martha, you're still there, I hope.
Still here.
All right, so we noted among all the other things about you that are cool that the New York Times bestseller book The Help will be a movie this fall, and you were the food stylist on the film. Is there, you got any insights for us, any good insider nitty-gritty?
I was one of them. It was really a community effort. I did not make the infamous pie. That was made by Leanne Fleming, who writes a column in our local Greenwood newspaper, and a great woman, Mary Hoover, who runs a little convenience store laundromat, did some of the cooking, and Deborah Shaw, who has worked at the Golden Age nursing home here for like 15 years, did some of the food, and I cooked, and we had retired cotton brokers making pralines. We had people all over town cooking, so it was definitely a community effort.
But it sounds like fun. I mean, was it? How did you get involved with the project?
Well, sort of the Greenwood is a really small town, and when the whole movie circus rolled into town, we were all just trying to, you know, get involved and find out, you know, ways to get involved. Mm-hmm. And I had a lot of experience working in commercial, doing food styling for commercials and that sort of thing when I lived in Minneapolis. So one thing led to another, and I ended up making gingerbread houses and cakes and pies and frying chickens.
All right, we want to know what stars.
Galore.
What stars did you meet, Martha?
Oh, we got to see them all. Sissy Spacek and Allison Janney and Jessica Chastain and Emma Stone. And
oh, how much fun.
Emma Stone.
Yeah.
And Cecily Tyson and Octavia Spencer and Viola Davis. And they really, Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer, their relationship in the movie is so wonderful. It's totally a buddy film, you know, in a lot of ways.
Cool.
All right, well, listen, congratulations on that. I want to make sure everybody knows where and how to find A Southerly Course.
And are you coming to D.C. at any point in time?
I hope to get to back out that way. I'll be, I did a big fun visit up in Richmond, and so I'm going to try to make it back out y'all's way this fall.
That would be terrific. Well, thank you so much. Tell everybody where they can find A Southerly Course, please.
You can find A Southerly Course wherever books are sold, but particularly at your independent booksellers and online at all of your major book retailers, but we always like to support those independents.
Well, it must be very like Square Books.
Right.
There we are.
There we are.
Okay, Martha, thanks so much for joining us, and please tell Lisa I said hello.
All right. Well, I hope y'all enjoy A Southerly Course and make some peach shortcake while the season's
good. All right, I'm going to make some peach shortcake, but I'll tell you, first on my list is a dandelion cracklins. That just sounds too good.
Nah, see, I'm going for the hominy grits, so you're going to be cooking for a while. Thanks, Martha.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Y'all
bye.
Have a
good
day.
You too.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Let's go back to Joseph Cerrone. Joseph, what do we have here?
The Chablis was delicious.
Great.
What a great way to start the day.
Absolutely. Perfect for summertime as well.
Uh-huh.
And this next wine is a Riesling. And like Chablis, which is widely misunderstood, I think Riesling has gotten kind of a bad rap as well.
It's got a bad rap with me.
Everyone it just does. Automatically like it. Assume that all Rieslings are sweet.
Yep, I'm right there.
And in Alsace, they're not sweet.
Okay.
They're concentrated. Mm-hmm. And this is by Domaine Zindumbrek. It is biodynamically farmed. They've been certified biodynamic since 2002, but practicing biodynamic farming since 93. Mm-hmm. And this is a
that's very voodoo.
Rich style, but has really great acidity to finish, which goes with a variety of foods.
Let's talk about what biodynamic wine really is, because for the great unwashed, of which I am one,
it's voodoo.
I can never remember what the heck it means. So.
Essentially, it's kind of an uber organics in a sense, where it's sustainable farming. Rudolf Steiner, an Austrian, took organic farming to the next level, where he incorporated the zodiac calendar, and it's about using different. There is almost a leap of faith when it comes to biodynamic farming, but the end result really is that how could sustainable organic farming be bad? And if those certain beliefs of channeling the cosmos into your vineyards does result in a better product, sure, maybe. But the but I think
this is a ringing endorsement. Well, we're,
but I have to say we're down with that.
At the very least, though, you are getting a product that has no herbicides, no pesticides, and is all natural.
Mm-hmm. Well, we believe in all that. Nikki just spent the week with the ghost of Captain Lorenzo Baker up at Cape Cod.
I did.
So all
no
of this
lie.
Voodoo stuff is.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see him, thank God. I would have lost my mind if I did. But
all right, so and you're pouring the Riesling for
yes.
us to try? All right.
Excellent. All right. Julia,
while you're doing that,
we haven't even introduced our next guest. I've already dug into the platter of cheese.
Julia Nicolaysen is the mistress de fromage, I guess we would call you.
Sure.
At Ripple, which is a great...
Is that on your card? Is that what your card says?
I don't have cards.
Oh, well, you should get one.
Cheesy lady. Ripple is this wonderful little unassuming-looking place right across the street from the Uptown Theater in Cleveland Park in that row that used to just be the Roma restaurant back in my day and now is Ripple and Ardeo Bardeo and Dino and a bunch of other restaurants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we went in there probably 4 or 5 months ago, just we were sort of there and we had this mind-blowing
that's
experience.
Not what happened.
What happened?
I said, I really want to go to Ripple. I'm hearing a lot about it. Let's
she
go
lies.
Check it out.
She lies. It was my idea. But anyways, it's terrible that she takes those liberties with my memories. But anyways, it was a terrific meal, and we found a great wine list, and we found great cheeses, too. So there you are. When you put together a cheese program for a small restaurant like that, what's your goal? What are you looking to accomplish?
I think what's really important is being able to have something for everyone. I wanted to make sure there's both things for someone who's not as experienced with cheeses and just, you know, want something that's a little bit more familiar, but a little bit different. And then also something that's going to be, you know, a leap of faith, something that's going to be a new adventure. And so it's sort of finding a balance because we both have moms coming in with their toddlers. And
I was going to say, it's a very residential area.
Yeah.
So you're getting a little bit, I mean, you probably get a little from people out in suburbia, but predominantly I would assume that a lot of your clientele is right from your neighborhood.
We do, yeah. And we also, you know, being near the zoo, we get a lot of tourists as well. It's a real hodgepodge.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also have a really healthy group of regulars. And so I also have to keep it interesting so that they keep coming back and trying new things.
Well, as you were putting together your cheese program, before I ask my question, I have to know what we're eating. What is this?
This, what you've been snacking on is an aged Gouda.
We had this the other night.
Yeah.
It is just delicious.
I'm
going to
cut into the stinky
Where's
cheese.
Where is it from?
It's from Holland. It's aged 2 years. And so what you'll find in it are those little protein crystals.
Right.
Like you'd find in Parmesan. But it's got a really nice... deep. It's got a sharpness. It's got a sweetness. It's got a sort of a creamy mouthfeel, even though it's hard. But this is a great cheese. If there's someone, you know, a three-year-old on a table, they can eat this with their hands. They won't make a mess and get it all over their face. But it would also be really beautiful on a fancier board. Great color contrast. It's bright orange and different.
Well, and its flavor is fantastic.
Yeah.
And what is the stinky one?
The stinky one you're enjoying is called Petit Frère. It's from Wisconsin by the Crave Brothers. And this is one of my favorites because it's a great example of an American cheesemaker taking old traditions. Their family's both Irish and French, and so they wanted to make sort of an homage to their heritage. So it's sort of between like a Robuchon and an Ardrahan, but American made. So this is really an American original.
Now, when you, so you've been with Ripple since the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
So as you were putting together the cheese program, I mean, really across the United States, there are few restaurants that have great cheese programs. I mean, it's becoming more popular. Mm-hmm. I mean, in New York and, I mean, the bigger cities especially.
Well, but even Old Hickory has a big cheese cave. I mean, even a restaurant, a steakhouse that you wouldn't expect.
But so how did you go about, like, deciding how you, like, how much do you have the, like, luxury of space to keep all the cheese? Like, how do you put it all together to make it work for you and work for your clientele?
Well, when we first opened, our owner, Roger Marmette, wanted to have like 50 cheeses. Mm-hmm. I had to talk him down a little bit because part of, you know, what, you know, we're able to make such a great program because by keeping it to 15, we can make sure that the stock is always fresh, that the prices are low because we're you know, moving through things properly.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just sort of thought, you know, there's five main categories of cheeses. There's, you know, three different milk. There's goat, cow, and sheep, mm-hmm. and then there's washed rinds and blues.
Oh, I was so, going to say stinky, not stinky, kind of stinky, sort of stinky. And
there's that too. So we just thought we'd keep it easy, and at first we were trying to just make sure that in each category we had a local, a domestic, and a foreign.
Okay.
And then as things have progressed and as seasons progress, because cheese is seasonal, people don't always think about that, we try to make sure to have things that are local, but also just try to make sure we have the most delicious we can.
I have a question.
Okay, ask your question.
Because you know, Europeans treat cheese as a basically the dessert, the mm-hmm. almost the, you know, the last thought, and here we tend to eat the cheese first.
I mean,
we think of it as an hors d'oeuvre. So, you know, how do you handle that at Ripple? I mean, I recall it coming at the end, right?
No, we had it at the beginning.
Did we?
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall a damn thing.
he doesn't know what he's talking
because,
about.
It was just so exciting.
Because the
you
wine
know,
program was so good.
There
I don't remember
so much
not.
Wine and
no, but I mean, why, you know, how do you, because we do have an international mm-hmm. audience here in D.C., so how do you, you know, how do you address it?
You know, the way it works is when we hand out our menus, it's a clipboard, it's got all three menus, it's got our main menu, cheese and charcuterie, and it's got dessert. So anytime you're handed the menu, you see everything. So there are definitely people who order it as a starter. They have it as their entree, who have it as dessert.
No rules or regulations.
You can eat it whenever. My station is the first, you know, I'm open before the rest of the kitchen's open, and I'm open
later as well. We saw you at the front of the restaurant,
well.
So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's really meant that, you know, it's supposed to be a fun place. You're supposed to be able to eat whatever you want, whenever you want.
So how did you get into cheese? I mean, what was the start of the passion?
I grew up around a lot of cheese. My family, you know, I grew up around.
That doesn't really? Sound right. So everybody in the family was a wheel?
Yes, it's true. No, I grew up around the corner from my grandparents, and we.
Where?
In Rockville, Maryland.
Oh.
A lot of cheese in Rockville.
And, you know, every time we'd go over and have dinner, there'd always be, you know, a piece of Gouda out or something. There'd always be some sort of cheese on the table. And then as I got older, I decided when I left college that I wanted to learn, you know, to get into food somehow, and I ended up working at Murray's Cheese.
What an
New
education
York.
That must have been. That place is amazing.
Yeah, and so, you know, just, you know, similar to wine, the way to get into cheese is just by tasting as much as you can. So when mm-hmm. you work at a place that has 250.
That's always been my way.
You learn a lot.
Except you can't remember a thing, but whatever.
But you know what you like. That's
oh,
the
Nancy.
Important part.
Be quiet. All right, we're going to have to take a break in what, 1 minute?
What do we
all
have?
Right, so, well, one other question, you know, that I think makes sense.
You better ask it before the minute is up.
Well, all right. So we met Logan Cox, who's your chef.
Yes.
And we had his food was really yummy. But the question
and
is, do you
have to take a break?
No, we got a couple seconds. Do you need to work with him to coordinate what you're stocking in cheeses to what he's, you know, because his menu changes seasonally. How does that work?
Yes, I do work with him mostly just to make sure that if I like something, he likes it too.
That's it?
But,
you don't have to worry about it?
But we work more on in terms of the charcuterie because a lot of that are things that he prepares. And so sort of working over, you know, what's going to be coming up
well,
next.
Well, when we get back, I want to talk about how you fit the charcuterie in with the cheese because they do go hand in hand.
Mm-hmm.
This is David and Nikki Nellis with Foodie and the Beast. We're talking cheese and some wine. I see a rosé over there. We'll be back in just a bit.
How can I keep my child healthy during flu season? My teenager's always online. How can I be sure he's not into something harmful? Parents Perspective has the answers. Sundays at 4 p.m. on WFED 1500 AM. Designate Parents Perspective 44415 with a generous donation in the combined federal campaign or online at www.parentsperspective.org. Thank you for helping Parents Perspective work for you.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were a real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time. From the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
What if I told you that you could learn a new language the same way you learned your first language? With no tedious translation, no useless memorization, and no boring drills. You'd have every right to be skeptical, especially if you struggled with languages in the past. That's why we want to send you a free demo CD-ROM from Rosetta Stone. You'll find out what U.S. diplomats, more than 10,000 schools, and NASA already know. That this is the world's fastest, easiest way to learn a new language, guaranteed. Call now to request your free CD-ROM and try it with our compliments. Learn a language faster than you ever imagined. Call 1-800-600-6612 and we'll rush you the free Rosetta Stone CD-ROM today. Remember, there's no tedious translation, memorization, or drills, and the Rosetta Stone program offers more than 30 different languages. Call for your free Rosetta Stone demo CD-ROM today and see how easy and effective it really is. Call 1-800-600-6612. That's 1-800-600-6612.
We're back on Foodie and the Beast with David and Nikki Nellis. And before
we get
back to
that, a ghost reference?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't know. I just want to quickly thank the folks that make the show possible. First, our friends at Georgetown Bagelry who make awesome bagels.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody snarfs down before the show starts.
It would be good with the cheese.
It would be good with the cheese. Folks at Neighborhood Restaurant Group, particularly at Planet Wine, a great wine store out in Delray. The folks at Founding Farmers down on Pennsylvania Avenue and Farmers and Fishers on the Georgetown Harbor, which is coming back from that flood, and they'll be open shortly. Great restaurants. Notte Bianchi Dish and Circle Bistro, all owned by Modus Hospitality. And Charles Schwartz and Son Fine Jewelers, and our friends at Bethesda, if I can say it, Bethesda Central Farm Market.
Mm-hmm.
So thanks to all of you folks for supporting the show. So Julia, let's come back to you.
So you guys have, Ripple has an incredible wine program. Your sommelier, Maurice Cherry, did I say right? How do you work with him as far as the wine, the cheese and wine pairings? Do you work together? Like, that must be fun.
It is fun. I absolutely love working with Mo, and what's I'm really lucky, you know, my station is the first thing you see when you walk into the restaurant. I'm standing right there at the front, which means I'm also right next to the bar. So
so you have the best place in the house.
I have the best place in the house.
People hitting on you while you're trying to
do
the
cheese?
Of course
not. They're like,
Ripple.
Yeah.
So, but what's really great is being able to work side by side with a sommelier who also, you know, he's also gone to culinary school and to be able to really talk things out. So, you know, I have some thoughts of my own. You know, usually when I'm pairing things, I just like to think about what I would like to be eating or drinking.
Right.
But it's also great to be able to turn to Mo and get a little more.
So when people come
backup.
In and they see the name Ripple, do they expect that cheap wine? That
there are a lot of jokes about that. People also think it's from a Grateful Dead song.
Oh.
It seems, though, that as Ripple, I believe, was stopping produced sometime in the 70s, there is a bit of a generational
gap. The old guy. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
Thanks for looking at me when you said that. Okay, we're done with you.
But it's meant to be a joke because we don't take ourselves seriously.
No.
And neither does David.
Why should I bother?
We're all good.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the menu there, too, because, I mean, one of the things we noticed from the menu is very seasonal and very, lots of changes from the first time we were there to the last time, which was only a couple of weeks ago. So what's he got going? I mean, summer's it's hard to believe it's half over, and so fall's coming. Have you got any preview on that?
of fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, we're in summer.
Summer.
Just like,
asking.
It's not fashion. Fall. Seriously.
We'll have braises and things when that comes around. But for now, we've got some great soft shell crabs, which are just fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
An amazing corn soup. The corn is so sweet.
We had that, and yeah. We had the soft shells. They were coated soft in like were... tapioca, right?
Yeah, tapioca flour. I'd say it's really, really crispy.
They were delicious. They were really yummy. Very different. It was a nice. So many people like fry them into submission. You sort of lose the flavor of the crab. It was really nicely done.
Yeah. He's just got a really really clever way of looking at things and pairing things together. And it's still really fun. And it's great. It's wonderful.
Well, before we finish up with you, let's pick two of your favorite cheeses that you're cutting up now. Would they be what you brought in today, or do you have two others?
I would say they'd probably be what I brought in today.
Okay.
I'd say my top favorite is Abbé de Bloc, which was one of the devoured cheeses.
Don't look at my
plate. It's a sheep's milk cheese from the Pyrenees, and it's a recipe that's 3,000 years old, and it's just totally traditional, and they've been making it for years, and it's just...
Well, they do a really good job.
Yeah, and it's just really creamy and sweet and round, and I think that's just what sheep's
milk.
Well,
I know you
want
people to come to Ripple for it. Can it be found in stores here locally, or is it...
It can be found at stores. We buy all our cheeses at Cowgirl Creamery. Mm-hmm. They do a wonderful job, and they are really helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And
even local cheeses, you use them for everything?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
We do get our... we have a fresh chev that we tend to get directly from the farm, but other than that, everything comes from Cowgirl. Cool.
All right, let's make sure everybody knows where Ripple is. Hit us with the address.
It's 3417 Connecticut
Avenue. It's across from the uptown. That's
it's by the uptown. It's where the Roma used to be.
All right. Yeah. And listen, thanks for joining us.
Yeah,
thank
you. Is the exact space where the Roma used to be?
Yeah.
Oh,
the other part is what Firehook is now.
Right.
My sister got her first kiss from Bobby Bellino at the Roma in 1960. And
that's how old he is.
My father was very upset. Very upset. But he was always upset, so it doesn't matter. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for joining us today.
Joseph, let's come back to you.
All these delicious cheeses.
You guys are going to take there's a little break at Michelle at the end of August. Is that right?
That's correct. We're going to be closed for about 3 weeks, from August 14th through September
6th. Sort of as the French do?
Yes.
That's so nice.
Yes, a little time off, and then we'll be coming back in full swing, and really excited for the fall. Some new programs coming up. We'll be adding a 5-6 course tasting menu that'll be featured on our Onyx table.
What's the Onyx table?
The Onyx table. It's a floating table, almost a chef's table, just adjacent to the kitchen. A very nice showpiece, and a great way to be able to see what's happening in the restaurant, in the kitchen as well.
Well, because the kitchen is gorgeous.
Reveal what some of the courses are?
Not at the moment, because we are looking at seasonal items. That actually has not been determined.
All right, so you don't have to tell me and then kill me.
Okay. So, but wait, before we finish, I see rosé.
Yes.
I've been obsessed with rosé all summer. Well, it's just so perfect.
And I think that you're one of the few, unfortunately. And, you know, as Chablis and Riesling have gotten a bad rap, I think rosé has a different kind of problem. People don't drink it.
Well, no, you know why?
Nikki does.
Well, I do. But people think it's White Zinfandel.
Right.
You know, I had a girlfriend who's not in the food world say to me once, I ordered rosé, she's like... Mm-hmm. Can't believe you're drinking White Zinfandel. I'm like, I'm not drinking White Zinfandel. I mean, that's
why. I'm drinking rosé, yo.
Yeah, exactly. Right.
And the reality is that it's delicious. It's dry. It goes with all kinds of foods. And this one in particular, the Domaine Locus Ameno Reserve de Soleil, we pour at the restaurant for $10 a glass. It's inexpensive and it's delicious, and that's something that we've really been trying to put out there. Even though we're located in the Ritz-Carlton at Tyson's, we don't want to exude this notion that we are expensive. We're very much an approachable restaurant. We offer a 3-course prefix menu during lunch for $21. We have a prefix dinner menu for $60. It's a very approachable menu, bistro fare, and we're really encouraging those to look beyond the luxury Ritz-Carlton lion out in the front and come in and join us.
Well, I think that's fair. And I mean, other Ritz-Carlton restaurants in this area, like you have West End Bistro.
Correct.
I mean, there are, you know, restaurants that are very good quality but aren't like Maestro, like ridiculously expensive. So, you know, I think it makes sense. And we've been to Michelle and have had a lovely time there, although we have not been since John Matheson has been there. So we do need to
definitely come back.
Go back and say hi to John.
We'll have to go back and say hi to John. Well, thank you for coming and for pouring all these delicious wines today. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
And I'll jump in and just say, if you enjoyed what you heard today, there's a whole lot more going on in the greater Washington area, and there's a lot to know and do. So go to the listareyouonit.com. It's free to subscribe, and it's got hundreds and hundreds of events and activities. Even in the next couple of weeks to check out, particularly if you're interested in any Bastille Day celebration, now would be the time to go to the
list. Absolutely. There's so many Bastille Day celebrations going on. In fact, when I'm on WTOP later on today,
At 12:50?
At 12:50. Listen in. we'll be talking about Bastille Day, but we'll also be talking about, and we had them on 2 weeks ago, it's Eat Local First Week. What's it called?
Yeah, Eat Local First Week.
So the whole week is about eating local, and there's all these fabulous activities going on all around the city, like foraging.
You can go foraging on the median strips and pick dandelions and other crazy stuff.
And what did they
bring
in? Mulberries? No, not mulberries. What did they bring
in? They brought in berries and dandelions and mint.
Mint, wild mint.
Yeah, all kinds of stuff that's available around the city.
So go forage.
So if you see me on all fours, you know, grazing, just don't say, hey, there's a cud chewer. Say, there's David foraging.
Okay.
All right.
That wasn't funny at all.
I thought it was funny.
Not at all.
And Julia laughed. I like you.
Polite.
You know, Julia, I like you better than I like Nikki.
She's young and polite.
All right, so
as we do on every show, we like to give props to a specific charity, and especially now that it's summer, people don't really think about, you know, filling up the food banks and giving to those in need. So
yeah, and that's one of the things that tends to be what people do at Thanksgiving and Christmas, but there's need 24/7, 12 months out of the year. So please go visit marthastable.org. Their mission is to help at-risk children and families in the community, and trying to improve their lives by providing educational programs, food, clothing, and all sorts of enrichment opportunities. They need your help. They need your energy. They need your money.
Yes.
So go to marthastable.org.
And also, as we do on every show, we like to leave you with a little quote.
And I was inspired by all this Bastille Day talk, and I think the most unfortunate quote ever quoted was a food quote. Mm-hmm. And it was by a woman named Marie Antoinette, who said, "Let them eat cake." And the rest is history. That's it.
That's your big quote.
That's my big quote.
Let them eat cake.
It's not boring. It's Bastille Day. You're boring.
I just think it's boring. I think you did that last year.
Welcome to Divorce Radio. No, I didn't do it last year. I never repeat a quote. All right, I want to thank our guests, Martha Hall Foose, Christophe Bateau, Julia Nicolaysen, and...
did he say it right?
I did.
Nicolaysen.
And
okay.
Joseph Cerrone. I said that right, too, didn't I?
Cerrone.
Cerrone.
But I thought you said it was... It's Cerrone, but you said people had shortened it to Cerrone, too? No?
No.
No. You heard what you wanted to hear, but it's
Cerrone, though, in Italiano. Never mind. And
I'm sorry,
Joseph. I beg your pardon. And Nicey Nellis. Next week, we got a good show coming up.
Yes, we do. We have a great show. We have Freddy's Lobster Shack coming in.
It's like new restaurant week.
Yes, maybe. It is like new restaurant week. Freddy's Lobster Shack is brand new. They're coming in with lobster rolls.
Yay.
And the people from Salt and Pepper, another new restaurant on MacArthur Boulevard, are coming in. And Fiorella, a little Italian. They just opened up in National Harbor, so they'll all be in.
And Derek Brown's coming in, yeah?
Derek Brown is coming in. He's singing the praises of the Ricky.
All right, so we will see you next week.
Everybody have a delicious week.
Bye.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFMHD2 Manassas, WTOPFMHD2 Washington, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.
This is a paid commercial program and may not represent the views of Bonneville International Corporation or Federal.